Oh, hey there. I'm Guy Branum, and I'm sick, so I sound super masked this week. And welcome to Pop Rocket, a weekly show picking over all the pop culture we love to love. With me to talk TV, film, music, and anything else entertaining, our digital strategist, Winter Mitchell-Rohrbaugh.
Hello, hello.
Hello, hello. Winter, tell me about your fall.
I see what you did there.
What do you mean?
My name's Winter.
Yeah, that's true. That's true. But also, we've segued into formal and official fall.
Can I tell you that first day where it was like just hanging out in the mid-70s? I don't care how bad that day was because it wasn't great, but that was the best moment that I felt that cold breeze. I was literally like Nick Cage when he gets off of Con Air.
Well, also,
I was just letting it fall over my face.
LA only does that like once every 4 or 5 years.
Right.
Normally it's
like horribly hot.
Summer until November.
Yes.
And we've got pop culture scholar and dyke about town, Karen Thompson.
Hey, Guy. Hi, Rocketeers.
Karen, what about you?
I've already started making stews.
Oh, that's exciting.
You know,
in
like
a crock pot?
Not in a crock pot because that was broke. So I actually like let something stew on the stove for like several hours.
It warms the house.
It warms the house. It smelled wonderful.
What genre were we working
in? I was working with a Filipino stew called caldereta.
Oh, that's exciting.
It's very lovely, kind of a tomato base, lots of tasty veg in it, and beef.
Oh, that sounds delightful.
Beef.
All right, you guys, we're not talking about soup today or talk soup. Coming up on this week's show, we're going to be talking about new and binge-worthy shows. Plus, we'll each be sharing our latest jams. But first, let's find out what arts and entertainment news or events have caught our attention this week. Winter Mitchell, what are you all about this week?
I'm all about, this is affects my world, probably. Well, it affects everybody, the whole world, but it's deeply ingrained in my world. And that is Kevin Systrom, who, up until 2 days ago, was the CEO and founder. He will always remain the founder, but the CEO of Instagram stepping down.
What was that about?
Yeah, what's going on?
Let me drop some tea. Essentially, you know, Instagram was purchased for $1 billion in cash by Mark Zuckerberg and of Facebook infamy about 6 years ago. And when Instagram was purchased, it was only like a company of like 10 or 11 people, including Kevin. And they were a fast growing social media network. And, you know, could they have scaled on their own? Potentially. But obviously, there's no question that by bringing Instagram into Facebook's world of apps is what they considered it, that this platform has obviously grown. And it's the only thing that was always shocking to people is that Kevin stayed on a lot longer than a founder would stay on if a company had been purchased and absorbed, right? So the tea is that if you've noticed all those weird changes that have annoyed the shit out of you, that's been Zuck. So the chronology, the sort of
like the different ways in which people's feeds appear,
appearing, like different ways that content is being programmed at you, more ads, all those things are a product of Zuck. Even bringing Instagram into a suite of advertising options in Facebook, like you buy an ad on Facebook, you can put it into Instagram and there's no control really for Instagram if you do it that way. So there's a lot of issues that Kevin Systrom just really, he fought internally. And from what I hear, he was totally professional about it because I would have been like fighting everybody. A professional about it, but he started really pushing against sort of what Zuckerberg wanted, which is more monetization, more control. He inserted somebody in between him and Kevin, himself and Kevin, Zuck did. He put someone in between him. So like Kevin didn't report to Mark. He reported to some guy that was installed. So he just felt like there was consistent overreach. He didn't want to deal with it anymore. So he peaced out. And it was a shock to everyone internally. But according to my source, it had been discussed amongst Kevin and his co-founder for like maybe 3 or 4 months.
Okay, I have a question for both of you.
Mm-hmm.
You invented an app. You made $500 million off of it. When you leave Facebook, like what's his name is now, do you go try to make your next thing? Also, you're like 35. You're 30, 35. Do you go try to do another thing or do you just like buy an island? Do you just say retirement for 40 years?
I would be retirement for 40 years. Yeah. I'd just be like, you know, bring me that infrared grill. Let me support some important causes.
Well, patroness. You know, I imagine you would do good with patroness.
Let me be a patroness. Let me bring, you know, Yan to bring me, make some banana ramen cakes for me, that kind of thing. And yeah, that would be it. But that's why I'm not a tech person. And I think that if you are always kind of trying to remake the world or do something cutting edge, I don't think that one can sit and expect the rest of the world to unfold without your participation.
I would take the time off that I could get because their app has changed the world. Their app is more important than Facebook right now. Mm-hmm. But I would never want to stop inventing, and I would be on the hunt in the search for the next thing, however it came to me. I would just be on the hunt. I'd be talking to young kids. I'd be talking to influencers. I'd talk to, you know, every aspect of every industry, everybody from the janitor all the way up to the CEOs, trying to figure out where is a need that I could fill. If I had the money and the means, I would just do that until I figured it out.
Once every 6 months, I will buy a Powerball ticket. And recently when I did it, I was like, this wouldn't make you happy. Like, you would still do all of the things that you do. Why are you doing this, guy?
But you could do it, all the things that you do. I mean, I would imagine I would do almost all of the things that I do, even with for something smaller, like a MacArthur Genius Grant, not a whole Powerball, you know? And I would just be like, I'd still do all the things that I would do. But
a better house.
In a better set of circumstances and in a way that would help carry and lift up the people around me.
I mean, that's very socially minded of you. I was just like, oh, Karen with a fucking pool in the hills. You would control lesbian life for 20 miles in any direction.
Although my friend, like Nao Bustamante, the artist, always says, it's better to have the friend with the boat instead of owning the boat.
Oh, that's wonderful.
Because, like, you know, then you don't have to worry about taking care of the boat, and then you can just pop up to the boat when you need to.
But I want you to have the boat because you would responsibly care for the boat and be my friend.
Yeah, would I rather be Madonna or be a friend of Madonna? I'd rather be Madonna.
Karen Thompson, what are you all about this week?
I've been searching for something affirmative, life-affirming amidst like the kind of garbage fire of our lives. And a little item in the news popped up today, and it made me so very happy. And it's that Kareem Abdul-Jabbar, the NBA legend, highest scoring NBA player ever, former Lakers center, is now transitioning into a career as a TV writer. He's in the writer's room for Veronica Mars.
I'm so happy.
Yeah. I mean, and it's like, I think about, it's kind of related to the question, what would you do with your, half $1 billion or whatnot? And the thing is, it's just like, I like the idea of having second, third, fourth, fifth acts. And yeah. Kareem has done it so gracefully from writing, TV criticism, like his little article on girls. And he already, when he was a basketball player, was doing funny cameos in movies like Airplane or in Enter the Dragon. And that never kind of diminished the power of his work on the basketball court. I'm just like so stoked because he's an amazing writer. His autobiography, Giant Steps, after the Coltrane album, is one of the best sports books I've ever read and, documents his transition from being, a college player at UCLA, Lou Alcindor, his conversion to Islam, his commitment to social justice issues, racial equality. I don't know. He's just a great guy, and I'm so happy that he gets to do this, as his, fifth, sixth act.
I'm most excited for two things. One, because scripted writers' rooms are deeply hierarchical places. Like, to some extent, there's going to be some 24-year-old former assistant who's the other staff writer.
Yeah.
Like, they're probably going to share an office. That is delicious.
Yeah.
And also, the $4,500 a week paycheck that he's getting, which is huge to most people in America, but he's Kareem Abdul-Jabbar.
I want to see his BTS Insta stories where he's gnawing on a Clif Bar and, having another spoonful of macaroni salad from Quest Services.
Writers' rooms are fundamentally about carbs.
I think it's going to be really funny watching him have to lean down and go into rooms because the ceilings are so short in writers' rooms and trailers.
Also having to talk to Jews. Being a writer on a show, I mean,
guy.
I'm allowed. This week, I know that my all abouts have essentially just been checking in with what small budget romantic comedy did Netflix put out this week. And this one, it's an interesting story. The movie is Napoli Ever After, starring Sanaa Lathan. Mm-hmm. And it's really heading into territory of a movie that I've talked about too much on this show.
Something new
from 2006, which is about uptight Jack and Jill bougie black girl who falls in love with a white guy and starts questioning some of the choices she's made. This is a different film, but one that centers...
But the same film
centering on hair politics. And just sort of this woman who, I mean, in Something New, the mom was played by Alfre Woodard. Now we have the venerable Lynn Whitfield playing, and we open on a scene of her hot combing Sanaa Lathan's hair. Like, an adult woman who is still having her hair done by her mom. And sort of the tension of the restriction that was required in Violet's life. Violet is the character, by being the sort of person who was always performing propriety. It is a good film. It is a problematic film. But there is a great moment in the film. Violet, there is an incident at a hair salon. A bunch of her hair comes out. She decides to go in different directions with her hair. And finally, the rain comes upon her. And turns it into a huge
natural style.
Yes, a big natural.
Yeah, big natural.
Like a large natural situation, and then she just shaves her head. Mm-hmm. And Sanaa Lathan actually shaved her head for the movie. And
is that why she has short hair on The Affair? That probably is.
Yes, mm-hmm. And it is an amazing scene that the filmmaker gives a lot of time to and is just like a journey. And the thing that distinguishes it from Something New, I would say Something New is a better written and better directed film, but this is a better Sanaa Lathan. You know, this is somebody who's got more complexity and more to say. And both of the characters are sort of like restrained people who don't have a lot to give. There's not much there in the script. But Sanaa Lathan does such a good job of making you feel the directions that this woman has wanted to go in her life and never felt capable of. And Something New is like a sturdier romantic comedy. But Napoli Ever After is like a more magnificent performance. Mm. It's really fun. And the hot guy from American Gods is in it.
Oh yeah, he's pretty hot.
Doing his natural British accent, and that's exciting.
One of the things that I feel have had the most freedom from is not relaxing my hair. I haven't relaxed my hair since I was 27.
Uh-huh.
And that's like 11 years of not putting poison into my hair, and it's changed how I feel about my hair. It's made my hair healthy, and one of my chief regrets about my wedding is putting a weave in that wasn't the weave that I really wanted, which was like a curly weave, because I wanted to stay true to natural hair and not having naturally curly hair, because I'm so committed to natural hair as a lifestyle. And it's, and I couldn't imagine running to a hairdresser every 2 weeks and being like her. I just couldn't at this age. It would make me insane. Going to get a keratin treatment every 2 months is annoying for me. Mm-hmm. So, you know, that lifestyle that I used to lead where I had to get my hair done every 2 to 3 weeks or else it would fall out or break off or whatever. It's just like it's freedom in doing that.
One of the things that the script gestures at but doesn't really commit to is like different phases, like when she goes blonde, when she goes bald, when there's new growth. And I really do love the idea of like, constraining yourself in any way is like
a prison.
Yeah. And it's like being able to feel ownership. Like, look, I don't have hair, so I don't get to have opinions about head hair politics, at least. But when I worked at Totally Biased, there was a lot of conversation among the female producers, one of whom is Laura Swisher, our producer, about Chris Rock's film Good Hair.
Mm-hmm.
And the, like, I was, like, as a white person who has consumed it, I was like, ah, yes. Like, you know, doing stuff other than natural hair to your hair is bad. And, like, the women who were producers there were like, fuck that, no. I get to do anything with my hair that I want to.
Right.
If I want, like, if I want to have blonde straight hair, that gets to be one of my options because, you know, like, I live in a world that privileges that. So let me at least know that that's on the table.
Right.
And that was, like, a very valuable way of looking at that.
Right, right.
You're listening to Pop Rocket. We're going to be right back with our recommendations for the shows that each of us deems binge-worthy right after this.
Hi, I'm Paula Poundstone.
And I'm Adam Felber.
Adam, I haven't gotten one thing done today.
Well, let me see your to-do list. Ah, yeah, well, here. Make 30-second promo for Nobody Listens to Paula Poundstone, so at least you're getting that done.
Score!
Except you haven't said what the show is about.
We're like a comedy field guide to life, starring me and you. I give useful advice, and we have real experts to talk about things like how to keep a friend, or what to do when you encounter a bear.
Bully for you, but you haven't said where people can find the show.
Oh, MaximumFun.org, or wherever you find your podcasts.
Welcome back to Pop Rocket. I'm your host, Guy Branum. With me in the studio are...
Winter Mitchell-Rohrbaugh.
And Karen Tongson.
Now, let's be honest. There is too much TV. The official TV season has begun. I am TiVoing Survivor as we speak.
of course you are.
There is a new harvest upon us, and as people are feeling overwhelmed by plenty...
You forgot Cornucopia.
I want you to pick through that cornucopia and tell everybody what most delicious bits they should be enjoying. Winter, tell us about a delicious bit.
I watched all of Maniac. And cried at the end because I'm so tender and triggered by everything that's going on in the world right now. But I think it was important to watch the show. And in this show, I hate to continue talking about the controversial Pop Rocket seal of approval vote. but when we talk about a show that examines mental illness in a way that feels relatable, I can honestly say this show does that. For me, not to relate so much to Jonah Hill's character, who is like the shunned fifth son of a industrial scion, or Emma Stone, who I've never seen her in anything great until this entire series. And she plays sort of like an antisocial, you know, fractured family, living in an isolated space character. But I understood sort of like their relation to the outside world and the desire and the need to just get better by any means. Maniac is hard to describe. It's a show that takes place in an altered, futuristic, but past nostalgic New York City, and it has a lot of 80s Kubrick neon aesthetic. It's there's technology that exists, but it's archaic technology. These two characters end up signing up for a trial that they have to go through three stages, and each stage takes them through. They have to re-experience their trauma. They have to coalesce with the trauma, and then they have to, at the end, somehow challenge it or become to find peace with it. And what ends up happening is that they go through these different stages becoming different people, and it also hints at some point in the middle of the series, I don't want to spoil it, that they're going through a simulation, and that's sort of what has been posed to them. But it's really a show about friendship. And that is what has been described through all these different articles, that it's a show just really about friendship. We're not looking at like romantic inclinations between Jonah Hill and Emma Stone's character, but there's something that I read today that it actually made me super emotional. And it said that it was a show that's dealing with, it's not just existential dread, it's a mid or quarter life crisis, depression, anxiety, the news cycle, general malaise, and aversion to mainstream cultural norms. They're saying, I don't want to trivialize mental illness, but Hill's character Owen is schizophrenic and has stopped taking his meds. Stone's character Annie is self-medicating her depression by abusing the pill from the clinical trial. Their mental health issues are evident and complex. What I meant to say is that there aren't enough narratives for any of us, the people grappling with evident trauma or the ones whose minds just don't feel good. Mm-hmm. There's never like a diagnosis. There's never like, you have this, you have that. There's discussion around it in the movie, and the series goes through different you know, scenarios that are unique and really interesting to sort of describe what it might be for them. But just watching the mental exercises as played out through these simulations and these dreams that they're brought into are fascinating. It is like going into a disturbed mind and seeing it being played out on television. I've never seen anything like it on television.
Yeah, I tried to get into it. I mean, you know, like, I have to say that I was super excited. I talked about this show on our fall preview episode or pumpkin spice episode or whatnot. And I love the director, obviously, Cary Fukunaga, who did the first season of True Detective, did The Alienist, etc. But I don't know what it was, but like I'm only about three episodes in, and I think that there's a lot of setup, and I think that I was dazzled by the set design. Like, what a great show to be the set designer on, and to be like the person like setting the look for. But I was just like, felt, I mean, maybe that's the effect. It's like I felt really sort of unmoored, and I also felt really, it felt really hard for me to connect to any of those characters, at least at this kind of nascent stage of the binge, you know, and the kind of, I was able to see when they start the trial and get some, a little more insight into Emma Stone's character and what the source of that trauma is. But I feel like with a lot of shows lately, at least the newer shows that have come out that are prestige or faux-tige shows on Netflix and Hulu, that the pacing is, to me, slightly antithetical to a binge. Like, I watched all of Forever, even though the pacing of that was weird, too. Mm-hmm. But I thought I would start Maniac and be able to plow through it, but I couldn't get into it.
I don't think it was designed for you to do that. Yeah. This is sort of, I don't want to say it's anti-binge worthy, because I think I needed something to not focus on what's happening this week. But mm-hmm. it forced you to pay close attention. Mm. And I think we do need that. I don't think we can afford to continue just consuming. They can't keep up with us.
Mm. I mean, that's fair. But I do think we do have a lot of shows now that require your full attention. Mm-hmm. Master of None, Atlanta, Insecure. Like, a lot of our prestige half hours are things that you just kind of can't just enjoy. And I'm very similar to Karen in that I felt unmoored by the show. And I really think it comes down to unreliable narrator with mental illness, be it Mr. Robot or Legion. Like, I was more okay with Mr. Robot, but I'm just like, what am I supposed to trust? Like, I don't care about this because I feel like it's always like a filmmaker or showrunner who's like, look at how clever I am.
No,
I'm going to make this a premise of the show, and then I'm going to show you that it doesn't even exist.
I'm not going to cape for it like hard, because I live with mental illness. I have a partner who has mental illness. I was raised by somebody with mental illness. I was in a family with mental illness. So all I know my entire life is that people are slightly off. And just being, and that really affected me. I think that's why I like glommed onto it.
Well, it's based on an Icelandic series? Or
it's Norwegian.
Norwegian.
Yeah, from the guy who did The Bridge. And mm-hmm. So I know it must be good.
It's just a long walk. And the thing is that we need, my biggest issue is I need to disappear into things, but I still need something that's going to give me a message.
I feel burned by Forever. I feel like I gave it 4 hours and I'm now mad at it. And so
no one's talking about it. Like, no one's talking about it.
Yeah.
I mean, like, the thing about Maniac is the world building is incredible.
Yes.
Right? But also, I'm super, like, I'm not sure how I feel about the techno-orientalism of it necessarily. I mean, I know it's like, you know, like Cary Fukunaga, like it's like an Asian American director or what have you. And it's just like, but I'm just like, oh, it's that kind of Blade Runner-y world where like there are these Asians, are they sinister or they're not? Like, you know, the kind of like, and also even like, you know, you see Emma Stone, like I love when Andrew T was here and he's like, you know, it's like a future world when there's a white person who really knows how to eat noodles well. And Emma Stone does that, I think, in like episode 3 where she's like sitting at the noodle shop. I mean, anyway, I mean, I'm fascinated by it. Like, I'm super riveted by it in a way, even though, like, I still haven't got my bearings in it. But
the doctor smokes his own medicine, which I think is just so unlike anything an Asian doctor would do. He smokes. He don't snort it or crush
it
down.
He's got a meth pipe. Yeah.
And is sleeping at the desk. If I walked in and my Asian doctor was sleeping at the desk, I would sue the entire establishment. My Asian doctor's asleep
at
the desk.
We're much better at hiding these habits.
Yes, this is insane.
Karen Toxin, what are you binging?
You know, I have to say, like, I tried to commit myself to the autumnal binge and to these new shows, these new prestige projects. So I also tried to watch... mostly because Hulu was just hassling me about it. I was just like, fine, I'll watch the first. You know, I'm Sean Penn is canceled in my mind for so many reasons. But I'm also just like, it's about space. I like sci-fi shit. Yeah. Like, you know, and plus Keiko Agena is in it. Like, if, for those of you who don't remember, she's laying on Gilmore Girls. And I was like, okay, this there has to be something there for me to get into. And I also found the pacing incredibly strange. The premise of the show is like in a not too distant future where this mission to Mars, the first manned mission to Mars, is about to launch. And the show opens essentially, and this is not a real spoiler because it's just sort of like, you know, that's the whole premise of the show is that they launch this first mission. And essentially it's like, Space Shuttle Challenger style, a trauma happens and like, you know, the vessel explodes and there's a lot of reckoning to deal with. And then now they're trying to save this particular mission to go to Mars. There's a lot of like weird kind of like we're going to DC to debate like space travel and its significance. And there's a lot of brooding Sean Penn, who has a troubled home life and family life with a deceased wife and a daughter who struggles with addiction. I don't know. There are a lot of British people in it because it's a co-British production. Uh-huh. And so, you know, you have like these kind of this like super smart female double PhD, like would-be astronaut, as well as Keiko, who's like the engineering officer who's, you know, they're there to try to like start up the second effort at this mission to Mars. Again, the pacing was just something. It's along the lines of Maniac, where you're kind of trying to, like, this should be a much more straightforward story, and it still was kind of evasive. But I did, like, somehow accidentally kind of get through six episodes of it ambiently.
How many episodes is it?
Only eight. But I still don't really know what's happening. I mean, I'm still like, what? It's like a character drama.
I just feel like, well, there's something so weird about the fact that everyone who's writing these 8 to 10 episode seasons learned how to do it in 24 episode world. And I feel like they don't exactly know what they're doing. Like, they're drunk on narrative because everyone was so used to having to write standalones that, like, they're like, we're going to tell this bigger story and break the rules. And it's like, buddy, get some rules.
But there's so much character work. I think that that's the thing that gets, I think, annoying about this.
It sounds
is that
West Wing-y.
It drops... Frankly, it's not that peppy. It drops a lot of what is compelling about these space, like, race to space narratives. And I think that its innovation is it dwells on like the domestic drama behind the people who are like
We've
struggling
had
through
so
this.
Much of
I know,
this.
But it's so much slower and
no,
like, you know, and
the
I'm just
Martian,
like, ugh, yeah.
The one with Matthew McConaughey, Passenger.
No, that's that like looks like a fucking Marvel film compared to this in terms
of pacing.
No.
The Martian is so fucking peppy. I love it.
The Martian is nice and peppy. There's stuff that happens. There's activity. But there's like long drawn out like sitting in the shadows
well,
like staring
also,
at the stars.
I mean, if you want like STEM West Wing optimism, Lost in Space had a lot of like plucky people solving the problem because they love math and
the
science
new
so
one.
Much. Yeah.
Well, frankly, I... watched this pretty crappy show that was canceled pretty quickly on ABC called The Astronauts Wives Club that was about like the Mercury like kind of a historical period piece, and that was more compelling to me than the first, even, you know, like whatever, it was hokey as frack, but I I will. I mean, there is a show that I would recommend, but I'll save that for like, you know, another sec. I'll save that for the next rotation through the topic.
Okay. I don't know that we've got more rotation. I do have a show that I can
BoJack Horseman
unabashedly be enthusiastic for. No, BoJack Horseman will be my second rotation. Okay. No, this is Hulu. It's National Treasure, which is a British series that Hulu is insisting is a Hulu original.
Really annoyed that it wasn't a remake of the Nicolas Cage film.
I was like Nick Cage.
No, it's really good. So there are two seasons, and each season, it's basically an anthology. Each season is four episodes that focus on a crime, and the way that it is explored, there is no main character, and what the show is constantly doing is challenging perspective. It's always saying you can't quite understand what's going on. The first season, very relevantly, is about a beloved British comedian who is accused by two women of having raped and statutorily raped one of them, but raped both of them like 20 years beforehand. And the story spends a lot of time with his daughter, who is a drug addict and cannot, you know, is having to confront the possibility that there's a lot in her life she doesn't remember. Like, was she also possibly abused? It's a wife who, you know, liked the position of being the wife of beloved comedian and looked past a lot of it to maintain sort of their image. And the idea of reality versus image is really significant. The second season, which I didn't know about until we were prepping this, and Laura, our producer, was like, which season do you want to talk about? And I was like, oh, I didn't know there were two. Then last night I binged the second season and it was possibly even better. It is about the black foster daughter of a white foster family who goes to visit her Nigerian British grandparents, and while there, a horrible thing happens to her.
Oh, boy.
And it is about race and gender. Like, the first series, I watched it because Julie Walters, Mrs. Weasley from Harry Potter, and Robbie Coltrane, Hagrid from Harry Potter, starred. And I love Julie Walters more than life itself, and so I just was excited to watch anything that she did, and she was great. The second season was full of actors I did not know, but who I fell in love with even more. Sarah Lancashire plays the social worker who sort of pushed for this little black girl to have a relationship with her biological grandparents so that she would know people who looked like her, and who is blamed by the public for what happens to her. She is thoroughly amazing.
Oh, God. I know I can't watch this now.
Wonmi Masaku plays the detective who is inspecting who's trying to figure out what happened. She herself was raised in foster care and has a huge amount of baggage related to everything involved. And she's like, you see all of these people trying to do the right thing but not knowing what it is, and it does such a masterful job. Like, it's the good kind of manipulation where at one point in the series, I legitimately thought that everyone might have done this thing to this person. It's really good. And the woman who plays the social worker, it's just a heart-wrenching. She basically becomes an alcoholic. It's this person who knew she was good at her job, who can't do her job anymore. It's fucking good. You should watch it.
It sounds like a hard one. I mean, I think that's the thing that we're talking about, these new, I mean, I think maybe binge-worthy is the wrong, like, categorization for these shows, because they deal with difficult topics, or at least they deal with a lot of interpersonal drama, and I think it's hard to, like, commit to that. I mean, I know that people always say this in relation to something like Handmaid's Tale. It's like, that's a show I can't binge. I need a palate cleanser. But I do think that there is a way now where I think the streaming platforms are like expanding their, or like, you know, stretching their limbs and like producing things that you will want to keep watching at a regular pace, but maybe not like wolfing down as you do.
I think you have to be able to like stop binging things. I think they're doing this on purpose. They're giving you meatier stuff, and it's almost addictive. Binge means addiction.
Yeah.
So if they've brought Netflix brought you in with binge worthy content, snackable content that you can just digest really quickly, and now they're like
they're
full.
Giving you the meal.
Well, they're giving you the meal.
What's interesting was the attempt at was it TBS with Anger Management and one other series where they did 10. And then they would do 10 of a sitcom. And then if that worked out, they would just order 100. And with the way
which makes no sense mathematically to me.
But with the way we take down old sitcoms, like there, it would be wonderful if they were producing a sitcom in volume to where you could watch it almost the way that you watch Friends now.
But I don't think that I don't think that's economical. And I think it's super expensive.
Those things are true, but also it's a different type of viewing that is not being catered to at all. And I guess you could say we have a huge backlog of Mary Tyler Moore's.
Exactly. That's what I was just going to say. That was my next comment.
That are waiting to do that. But I think that Hot in Cleveland managed to show up at like a slightly earlier point in our television history.
It's Sunny in Philadelphia, those shows.
Yeah. And like really sort of like satisfy that. Fuller House to some extent is doing that.
It's Always Sunny in Philadelphia is on FXX. And that's the off version of the Fox network. I just think that somebody the other day uploaded Murder, She Wrote, Wonder Years, and another bulk, you know, into our Plex server. And I was more comforted by watching just randomly. I picked season 4 and started when they got right into 1970 and watched the first 6 episodes. And that is nostalgic for me. Like, we are at that age where our, you know, my grandfather would watch, you know, old episodes of Bonanza because that reminded him of a different time. And I think
we have to learn how to make comforting television again.
Well, we do have to learn how to make comforting television, but we're so thrust in the midst. I mean, it can't be denied how terrible this world is right now.
It's true.
And I don't want the history books to ever, I don't want things that are happening right now to not be noted because kids consume everything online and they're less likely to open up a book. I mean, this new generation sounds like they're a little bit better than millennials, but they're less likely to open up a book and they're more likely to see a remix of a clip or a clip that's pulled out of.
But when you look at what Vine was doing until it died or what YouTubers are doing, they're really giving you all of the things that shitty multicam sitcoms gave you, like
Pratfalls.
Pratfalls in a sense that everything is fine. You know, look at this goofiness. Like, oh, we got this stuff all over our faces. Ha ha ha.
Except I saw a clip today that was posted on somebody's Instagram of a little girl sassing her teacher, going in on it, saying, "Not today, Linda. I'm tired of you, Linda." And instead of getting the, "Oh, she's so funny. Oh, this is hilarious. Kids will be kids," I'm starting to see a lot of the, you know, her. She was raised inappropriately. She's gonna not be the learn or get the education she deserves. She'll be taught. If she learned this at home, she'll do this outside. And it's time for, as much as I hate people being all self-righteous and on their soapbox all the time, if somebody is getting some education from something because we're learning that we live in a world where we have to stand up for ourselves and we have to fight for what we want in a real way, not because the Beastie Boys told us so, like, then I'm actually fine with these really aggressive examples of television that is kind of aggressive. I mean, why else would they have a reboot of Murphy Brown? She literally changed game. I remember being 8 and all I heard every single day for a year was Dan Quayle not spelling stuff and her aggression with him. I didn't know what it meant at the time, but I'm 38 now. 30 years later, I know what it means now.
We have to learn to trust our voices today and not just keep looking backwards.
Yeah.
Although, it's like in relation to the kind of nostalgia tip that we were talking about, I think one of the things that these new shows do, like The First or Maniac, is some really clever stunt casting.
Mm-hmm.
Alice Beasley, aka Miss DePesto from Moonlighting, on Maniac.
Okay.
You know, she's, and I was like, oh my God, it's Miss DePesto. It's part of what like kept you like watching through parts of it that I wasn't like.
Yeah.
So I guess for someone who has that kind of retro maniacal mind, or like I said, you know, one of the things that compelled me to watch The First was Keiko Agana, right? And so it was just like, so I do think that there is a way in which people are trying to toy with that instead of like doing the kind of easy reboot or just like the kind of, here's the upload, here's the set of references we get. those little delicious bits, and it rewards people who really have a powerful relationship to pop culture in a way.
Do you have a second binge-worthy show for us?
Well, I mean, it's not new, but one of the things that I actually haven't nose-to-tail binged, and I haven't really nose-to-tail binged anything since, like, maybe the first season of Scandal, okay? Mm-hmm. And it's The Sinner with Jessica Biel.
Oh my God.
It is like such an intense show. And I'm like, everyone, like somebody recommended it to me and I was
What's
like-
What's the premise? I don't know.
The premise is, it's like not a whodunit, it's like a why done it. Uh-huh. So like, you know, so it opens, you know, you see this very kind of normie lady in her like life with her husband. And then in within like 15, 20 minutes, she commits a heinous crime in front of like a gazillion witnesses.
Wonderful.
At a lake. Like a brutal, brutal crime. And then, you know, she, of course, is guilty and admits to doing it. But then what you see is, you know, essentially this kind of busted detective played by Bill Pullman. You know, just everyone's just trying to figure out what's the motivation, what's going on. Did you know this person? Like, what's happening? And it is so twisted, like how it unfolds and like how it reveals this set of interconnections and other really messed up things. I think that like if we're gonna deal with also like a kind of sibling with perpetual illness, like we had in Sharp Objects, I think that this first season of The Sinner does it better. Everyone I know who started that like show, when I've recommended it or anybody else has recommended it, like tore through the whole first season within a matter of like 24 hours or like 48 hours. And so, I mean, there's a lot of violence, there's sexual violence, there's a lot of disturbing stuff about illness. Jessica's really good in it. I was like a total hater about this show before I actually watched it, but it's compelling and it kind of sticks with you.
Winner.
My second binge-worthy show is Ozark. And Ozark is about a family led by Jason Bateman and Laura Linney who have to escape to the Ozark and get caught up with the cartel. They essentially become like the main nerve center for the cartel in like the middle of the Ozarks. To me, it's the role of a lifetime for Jason Bateman. Why he wasn't nominated for this, I don't understand. Laura Linney
was.
There are a billion TV shows.
Because there's a billion TV shows. You're absolutely right. I think that Jason Bateman is one of my true, like, all-time true faves. I will nominate him for Pop Rocket Seal of Approval. Right now, I'm doing it right now. He's my all-time true fave, and he plays... Look, every time he's Jason Bateman, he's doing the Jason Bateman. For some reason, it's palatable. And it's just a little bit, it's basically taking his character from Arrested Development and just taking away that laugh track in your head. Everything he's playing the moment for what the moment is. And I think it's really played authentically. I also enjoy looking at how they do this thing where they, you know, this couple, they seem out of their element, but they're not, because they're a just perfectly nice white family, right? But then they've got the Ozark element that is constantly, you know, questioning their motivations. And then they've got they have the actual environment in which they are, which is the Ozarks, which plays a huge character to me, which I always love when the environment suits the story. They're out on this lake house, and this lake house serves as, like, again, the nerve center, as they're the nerve center, and they're kind of on this lake house managing all these things. And also having two kids while managing the cartel, and usually you keep the kids out of it, but the kids are involved. So there's just a lot going on here, and one of the best things that I loved about it was this one sequence where you see, I'm not really giving anything away, there's an assassin sort of hot on their heels looking for them because they know that they have this in with the cartel, so they're trying to do like a lot of interception. And there's a crosstalk with Jason Bateman and this other dude. And then all of a sudden, one of Biggie Smalls' classic songs from Ready to Die comes on. And you just take two of the whitest dudes in the whitest part of America and put a Biggie Smalls song on it and just make it stick. Because at the end of the day, the drug business is just, it crosses generations and it does what it wants. So anybody who loves watching shows about drugs is probably loving this song as well. I just like this show a lot. I think that, I mean, Laura Linney gets all the accolades all the time, but I mean, Jason Bateman to me is like the best.
But Laura Linney is so great.
Laura Linney is great. I just really love Jason Bateman.
That's fair.
Yeah.
You guys, For my second pitch, I'm going to say new season of BoJack Horseman.
Knew it.
Yes. It is like a essentially sad Caucasian baby boomer talking about his sadness, which we've had before a couple of times. But it's a sitcom that is still full of jokes. And like BoJack, with a cartoon, there's always this question of why is it a cartoon? And sometimes it's so people can fly or fit through tiny holes or that kind of thing. But there are those shows like King of the Hill that just use it so that you can embrace absurdity a little bit more. And I think BoJack Horseman does such a good job of using this absurd world to allow us to forget what a despicable person he is. And it's a thoroughly great season.
Is he a horse?
He is a horse. he's like, in this season, his mom has died, and he is like managing those emotions. And there is one episode, it is truly great, that is just BoJack giving her eulogy.
Sorry about the closed casket, by the way. She wanted an open casket, but you know, she's dead now, so who cares what she wanted? No, that sounds bad. I'm sorry. I think that if she could have seen what she looked like dead, she'd agree it's better this way. She looked like this. Kind of like a pissed off toy dinosaur. Coroner couldn't get her eyes closed, so now her face is forever frozen in a mask of tremendous horror and anguish. Or as my mom called it, Tuesday. Tuesday. My mom called it Tuesday.
It is just a close-up on him. Like, it's like an old-school sitcom bottle episode, but in an animated series. And I love that they are sort of romancing old-school sitcom to that extent, while still, you know, like, still using the cartooniness for, like, a truly goofy episode. If you haven't watched the show already, there's a lot of greatness in there. Do you either of you watch the show?
I've never watched it.
Last season or the season before, he went to a film festival that was underwater. And the entire thing was silent.
Yeah.
Like, it is just, it has such a great sense of fun and play. Aparna Nancherla plays his half-sister. It's a good show.
I don't know why I haven't been seduced by any, animated stuff. I mean, there's BoJack, there's Rick and Morty, there's Steven Universe, which, like, people are so ecstatic about.
Rick and Morty is really good. Like, Rick and Morty
Bob's
Burgers is really good.
I've never watched Bob's Burgers.
It's so good.
I think you would be charmed by Steven Universe. I think you would be delighted by Rick and Morty.
Yeah.
Like, it's so funny, but also, like, deeply libertarian, but in a way that is like the best.
And I also think that you would like Bob's Burgers because it gives you that family. It's not dark, it's just hilarious and obnoxious, but it's like that family style. But I just realized, like, maybe I'm growing up, I was always really into very special episodes of any sitcom. And so all I want are very special episodes all the time. Like, to me, the Real Housewives are the Real Housewives are literally very special episodes every week. And I think I always think about the Family Ties episode where Alex's friend dies, and it's completely set up like a stage play, and it's two parts.
I just don't get it, Mal. Why am I still alive?
You're still alive to aggravate me.
No. No, that's no answer.
I'm just joking, Alex.
No, I should have been with Greg. I should have been sitting right next to him. I want answers, okay? Because I can't go on like this. Why am I alive? Why am I alive? Why am I alive? Why am I alive?
We're going to help you, honey.
I don't...
That's right. Alex. Alex. We're going to help.
I can still think in my head, see that episode, every single part, because that episode was so key and so directed so well and written so well, and his monologues and his pain. I mean, I really think that was like a breakout moment for Michael J. Fox, and it definitely set him apart. I mean, it went from being Family Ties to being the Michael J. Fox show.
But I'm going to say our single cams don't give actors the space to do that kind of work anymore. Now
I think Maniac did.
No, all of the heavy lifting on all of these shows is being done by soundtrack over long shots of the city.
I think Maniac didn't have a lot to do. You know, it's expensive to make a city that's present, very futuristic in its own sense, change it to do something else. There was a lot of tight shots and like a lot of special effects and graphics used in Maniac. But I'm very much, I mean, the night before I started Maniac, I watched Scanners, and Scanners is definitely was in the back of my mind as very central to like the design aesthetic. Obviously, Cary Fukunaga loves horror and mm-hmm. sci-fi and all those things. And Scanners, I mean, that was an era where like you use the set to help set the tone. And in Scanners, it's so stark and sharp and edgy and stiff. And then you have this really these really crazy special effects that were pretty ahead of their time for that era. I just think that is his. I love the fact that he is a true fan of horror, action, sci-fi, but there's a sensitive thread and narrative. It's probably the first thing that drew him to wanting to do it. There's something central to it that's an emotional connection amongst something that's so stark and like dense and like sinister. What is the word I'm looking for? Where everything's just like clinical and like whatever. Like there's something I can see all the inspiration. Even them sitting around and when they get their meal, it reminded me of Back to the Future too, when they all would get their meal and it would come down. Even the nods to New York, playing with New York and sort of like the characters that exist around New York, Staten Island, New Jersey, this, that, and the other, driving upstate. I don't know. Driving to Utah. I just think that, I don't know. I just had it was like kind of a love affair for me.
I need to watch it. I'll end up watching it. All right. You guys, let us know what stuff you think we should be binging. We clearly need some more television.
You just said there's too much.
I know, but you have to know what the good stuff is. And there's lots of good stuff out there.
We've watched all the good stuff.
I think there's still more out there.
I'm waiting for The Crown, and I'm taking in what Netflix gives me. I want to watch American Vandal. Do you know what the theme this year is? They all get poisoned. They shit everywhere. Now we have to figure out who made them shit. I have to process what's happening this week before I can dive into that.
I need to watch American Vandal.
Okay.
All right. You're listening to Pop Rocket. We're going to be right back with our jams after this.
Hey there, folks. I'm writer and performer Dave Holmes, and I host International Waters, where we pair a team of comedians in L.A. against a team of comedians in London in a pop culture trivia battle royale. Comedians like Elizabeth Lame.
Can I ask you, is that a chasm or a chasm that you just discovered between you and
it's
Joe?
Chasm.
A chasm. Okay.
Nobody says chasm. Nice try. Do you say chasm? Were you trying to soft pitch your idea of saying chasm?
Well, I've just learned something again.
April Richardson.
In high school, I cut my hair really short.
Yeah.
But in between, I got a mullet as a joke. Like, I went to the place and I was like, okay, cut it all except the back and I'll have that for like a day. And then I started like getting my feelings hurt.
Yeah.
So people were like openly laughing at me.
And many more. Join us every other week on International Waters with me, Dave Holmes. Find it on MaximumFun.org or wherever you get your podcasts.
Welcome back to Pop Rocket. I'm your host, Guy Branum. I'm sick. With me in the studio are...
Winter Mitchell-Rohrbaugh.
And Karen Tongson.
Every week on Pop Rocket, we ask our panel what's current jam. So we turn now to my friend, Karen Tongson. And I say, what's your jam?
Oh, my jam is a throwback. And it's because I've been seeking little pockets of comfort. I think many of us are. Recently... some of you may have seen it on Twitter or like on Facebook. I posted it on all my social media feeds is that I rediscovered one of my high school photos from like 1991, my senior photo where I'm wearing a bodicey cheesecloth pirate top and have long hair and nails and the whole deal. And I was trying to think about like, well, what was, I mean, aside from the early 90s, what was the style inspiration? And I rewatched the music video for SWV's Right Here, The Human Nature Radio Mix by Teddy Riley from 1992. And I mean, you probably remember SWV for
Sisters
Guy.
With Voices.
Yeah, but also
it's Taj from Survivor.
Taj
Token
from
Teens.
Survivor. I was going to say, Survivor, you know, the Survivor Token Teens. That's how Guy is connecting to them. And anyway, this song just gives me pleasure and delight. Also, the music video has a lot of like dolphins and whales in it and horseback riding and like flowing hair. And again, like kind of, you know, denim shorts with like pirate tops. And it just brings me back to a very happy place. Plus, you hear a young Pharrell Williams chanting the S, the double, the U, the V during the song. Anyway, here it is right here.
Karen, can I tell you...
It's a bonbon.
Can I tell you the official Sisters with Voices joke that has been in my state? Like, it's now long gone, but I once did a joke about Sisters with Voices. Are you ready for it?
I'm very sad to miss it, but yes.
There can't be a girl group named Haim. This is back before I knew it was pronounced Haim. There can't be a girl group named Haim. That's not a girl group's name. That's an old Jewish man's name. That means somewhere there's a synagogue with a cantor named Sisters with Voices. this week, it is another Troy Sivan song from his most recent album. It is a song about being a 17-year-old gay boy who is on the hunt for experience and learning and, you know, has... We've talked so much about, you know, inappropriate, like, sexual relationships and coercive sexual relationships. This is really Troy Sivan speaking from his own experience of being a 17-year-old boy who is just trying to figure out the world, and I really love it. Boy becomes a man now, can tell a man to slow down. He'll just do whatever he wants. Winter, you got a jam?
My jam is simply, I believe Dr. Christine Blasey Ford. I believe Dr. Christine Blasey Ford. I believe Dr. Christine Blasey Ford. Stop Kavanaugh.
You have been listening to Pop Rocket, hosted by me, Guy Branum, with Winter Mitchell-Rohrbaugh and Karen Tongson. Our theme music is Party Booby Trap by Ozzy Mizo. Thanks to him for letting us use it. Thanks to everyone for the 5-star reviews on iTunes. If you haven't already, please review us. This week we had an outpouring of reviews. I assume that Margaret is at home lifting couches and leaping over buildings.
I was going to say, I think that she got such an extra charge, like that she's like doing like 10
she's
CrossFit
like
classes in a row.
Kay Randall. Hello says, second time sending a 5-star review because I can't say enough good things about this podcast. Praying to goddess this provides enough health for Margaret to make it through another week. Notorious RGB and Keanu Reeves say, hark, the pop rock and angels sing. What art thy jam? 5 stars send. Hola, bichachos, which I must say is in the running for the Pop-Tart.
Hola, bichachos!
As a lonely country homo, I spend 68 hours a week mowing. Your fantastic podcast makes that time go so much faster. Oh, buddy, I can identify with that pain.
Where does he live? Can he tell us where he lives? Because I will come visit him and help him mow his
lawn. Need to know, hola, bichachos. Maria Zaragoza says, I pray for Margaret's health. She writes, this is a podcast I turn to as soon as it posts. Thank you for making me feel a little less of a freak for really caring which guy in Crazy Rich Asians was hotter or which Drake's summer song was more of a bop. I love you guys. Keep Margaret safe. Get in touch with us on Twitter. We're at Pop Rocket. We're joining our Facebook group and get in the discussion. Plus, we have ourselves an Instagram. What is it called?
At Pop Rocket Podcast.
Look at our photos. We are a production of MaximumFun.org. The show is edited by the delightful Shayna Deloria, and our senior producer is Laura Swisher, who really has had a better day than today.
MaximumFun.org.
Comedy and culture. Artist owned.
Listener supported.